And as we're getting off the phone, I asked if he wanted to grab a drink. He tells me he's going away for a while. I joke back to him. Oh yeah? You hanging with your evil cabal this weekend? Thought that was only during the winter solstice. But he doesn't laugh.
Welcome back to Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weisab. Today, we're talking about a Netflix movie called Leave the World Behind. There's a lot. There's a lot to unpack. And today is a bonus episode. That's just how the timing worked out. Every month, I do an episode, a bonus show, only for the supporters. The supporters keep the show alive. And they get bonus content. And today, just so I happen to land on this controversial film. We're going to do a full analysis of this Netflix film, Obama produced. It's called Leave the World Behind, and we're going to go deep into theories of elites controlling the world through cosmological rituals, evolution of man through Huxley Agenda 2030 UN-esque type ideas, some symbolism, of course, as always. Lots of symbolism to unpack. How many all-seeing eyes did you count? I counted many, and we're going to talk about them today. As well as symbolism of Stanley Kubrick. Yes, Stanley Kubrick. The Shining is clearly symbolized in here, as well as our favorite movie, Eyes Wide Shut. The greatest Christmas movie ever recorded. Eyes Wide Shut. Oh, you didn't know there was Eyes Wide Shut in here? Well, you better stay strapped in, because we're going to cover that. We also have a little bit on Matthew Perry and Friends, right? The show Friends. And, of course, symbolism of alchemy. We talk about deer symbolism, because there's deers throughout the movie. It's on the cover of the movie, or whatever you call it. What do you call that? You used to call it the cover, like when things came in DVD cases or VHS cases. The image of the movie shows you a deer, because it's prominently featured in the film. And we're going to talk about it, because guess what it's about? It's about sacrificing humans. My God. And we're going to talk about the Illuminati white man's burden of controlling humanity. So these psychopaths out there, this is how they think. We're going to talk about that too. There was a ton of chatter about this online. And it was funny, because I think I saw it on Letterboxd. This movie was trending, getting good reviews, and I thought, oh, okay. And I just so happened to have some free time on Sunday, and I queued it up, and it pulled me right in, very suspenseful. And I noticed everyone's talking about it now. All the conspiracy theorists are talking about it. Luckily, I was 30 minutes in. I thought, man, there's a lot going on here. Once I saw the Obama thing in the credits, I thought, oh boy, here we go. And there was an all-seeing eye right off the bat. I said, oh boy. So I finished it. Then I hurried up and rewatched it again and took my notes. And here we are today. But a lot of conspiracy. I've read some things. People didn't like it. I thought it was a great movie. Now, I'm not blinded with Obama rage that a lot of people probably are. People are mad. They're like, I'm not watching nothing with Obama's name on it. Well, I don't know what to tell you. Is it worth watching? I thought so. I enjoyed it. Even with the long runtime, 141 minutes, that's almost 2.5 hours. Good God, that's a long-ass movie. But to its... I don't know. I lost my phrase there. to speak to how suspenseful it was, it flew by pretty quick. But yes, if you want to know, should you watch it before you listen to this? Yes, you should. If you like suspenseful movies, it was very Hitchcockian, I thought. I thought it was really good. So yes, I would prefer you watch it before I ruin the whole story, because once I give you all the info on the... I'm spoiled the plot, it's not going to be quite as suspenseful. Let's briefly go into the film. It was filmed in April 22, released in limited theaters November 22nd of 23. Curious date, my friends. November 22nd, 1963, of course, is when they blasted JFK in that ritual. the James Shelby Downard King Kill 33 ritual live on television. The revolution will be televised, they told us. And then things never got on track since then. It's been deception upon deception. The film is based upon a book of the same name by a guy, by a person named Rahman Alam. And then we've got the cast. All-star cast. Julia Roberts plays the one mom. The mom, the wife, I don't know. The one woman, Amanda Sanford, played by Julia Roberts. Then her husband, Clay Sanford, is Ethan Hawke. And they have two little kids. Then you've got, I'm going to butcher these names, Mayor Shala Ali as G.H. Scott, a.k.a. George Scott. And he's with his daughter, Ruth Scott, played by Mayala. Sorry for butchering the names. It was directed by a guy named Sam Esmail, who apparently was the director of Mr. Robot. I've never seen it. It's apparently about hackers and stuff, which is apropos for what this movie's going to get into. And with that said, plot spoilers coming. We're going to get into the movie right now. I'm going to run through the whole plot with you. Break down a lot of conspiracy symbolism as we go. And it's going to be a wild ride, folks. Also, another warning. I'm swearing today. We usually don't do that on this show because I know some people don't like the swearing, and I can respect that. But today's not your day. Because the film's got swearing, and I'll be playing the clips from it. Therefore, they are dropping the F-bombs. I will also. I will take advantage of that and allow myself to speak freely. I cuss like a sailor in my real life, folks. And today we're going to mix it up a little bit, so get ready for that. All right, you ready? Let's go. Film starts out with the sun tracking over the earth. It's a new day, right? And you're going to see these cosmological activities and astrological bodies throughout the film. And my belief is that they're pointing to the idea of humanity evolving in cycles based upon the patterns of astrology. Some of the Great Reset folks subscribe to this idea. A variety of sources we've gone through over the years. We did, how many episodes on the Great Reset? Did we do 6, 7? Well, I did a book review, the Great Reset Part 5. I read a book called Generations from 1991. And wouldn't you know it, it predicted the future about QAnon and what the occultists' fourth turning, basically the new age of man. You know, this is a theme you see all the time. Age of Aquarius and the new age and all this stuff. And the Kali Yuga. We did a whole show about Steve Bannon. We interviewed Professor Ben Teitelbaum about his book, War for Eternity, about Steve Bannon's traditionalism. And they want to take advantage of the shifting cycles of humanity. And they want to instill a traditional-esque authoritarian dictator, fascist sort of figure. So we've got these forces fighting for what the future looks like. And if you ask me, it's very critical to the discussion. I'm going to put links in the show notes to those two episodes if you haven't heard them before, because they go back to 2020. Maybe you're new. You should check those out if you want to be very, I don't know if scared is the right word. If you want to be very enlightened into what is possibly happening here behind the scenes. We're talking about the planned, or should I say facilitated, collapse of society is what this is all about. It's about the Illuminati, the elites, trying to coordinate a collapse of society so they can rebuild it in their vision of total control. These various forces, they are waiting their turn to instill their globalist New World Order, their Luciferian World Order. Some people... I think there's forces fighting against each other. You've got this sort of Luciferian forces waiting. Then you've got the white Christian nationalist forces waiting. Like, everyone's waiting to sort of for this cycle to kick over so they can, you know, rebuild. which is a it's to tear down and rebuild. It is a concept called solvent coagula. You see it on the Baphomet. We've seen it many times. 9/11, a big ritual, you could argue, that was doing the same thing. Anyways, back to the movie. We're introduced to Amanda and Clay, that's Julia Roberts and Ethan Hawke, husband and wife. They're in their bedroom. It's entirely blue. It's way too blue. I don't know what that's about. Maybe they're setting the mood. She seems a little depressed, maybe. And if you look closely, you're going to see Clay's got a mug that says 76ers, even though they live in New York, but the Philadelphia 76ers. And you'll also see on the fireplace mantle, there is an eagle, like a stuffed eagle. And I noticed this and thought, that's kind of strange. It was the Sixers mug that kind of made me think, well, that's kind of weird. They live in New York, but it's a Philly mug, right? Well, it made me think of The Shining. Do you remember in The Shining, the symbolism of America? The guy who, Jack Nicholson at the beginning, he goes to get interviewed for the position at the Overlook. And the guy interviewing him, I can't think of his name right now. In fact, I got a handy dandy copy of my book, Kubrick's Code, handy right here. And I'm going to look it up. Live on the air, we're going to look it up. Because someone bought this and I'm going to ship it out to him, okay? Stuart Allman. Is that the character's name or is that the actor? Anyway, Stuart Allman looks a lot like JFK. And you can see, that's the character's name, Stuart Allman. You can see on his desk a lot of paraphernalia, flags and eagles and stuff. This is in my book, Kubrick's Code, if you're watching the video version of the podcast. But, and then even when they pack up and leave for the winter, he still has these American sort of flags and stuff around the office. And we're also going to see some more symbolism from The Shining at the end of the film, bookmarking it nicely. We'll come back to that. But anyways, just take note to that, right? And Amanda, she's like, hey, Clay, I'm packing bags. I booked an Airbnb getaway for the family for the weekend. We're going to get out of here. All right. And then they roll the credits. And on the credits, you will notice an all-seeing eye. And I'm going to put images of all these things I'm talking about on my Instagram, at Isaac Whiteside. It's going to be two posts because it's like 20 images. A lot of images here to unpack. So look for both posts on there, at Isaac Whiteside. Links are always in the show notes. They roll the credits. We see the Obamas listed as executive producers. Ain't that something? Well, they own a production company called Higher Ground Productions. Apparently, they had signed a deal with Spotify and then Audible. This is their fourth film. They did some TV shows. If you saw on Netflix, Adam Conover's show, The G Word, talks about the government processes. I thought it was pretty good. It was entertaining. And then there's a show called Working, What We Do All Day. I have not seen that yet. And lo and behold, they're working on a film about the Betty and Barney Hill alien abduction called White Mountains. Now, you know we're skeptical of all the things we're being told about the UFO agenda. Well, isn't that interesting? Isn't that something? And you could argue, you know, I don't have a whole expose about Obama. I know some people don't like him. I know some people think there's a conspiracy that Michelle is a man. They call her Michael Obama. Whatever, right? I mean, that's people want to believe all this stuff. But it is interesting because here you've got a guy who had access to all the secrets, pretty much. Well, actually, if you believe some of the other, it seems that based upon the testimony of like David Grush and these UFO whistleblowers, that there is an inner sanctum. Even the president doesn't have access to all the info, which is pretty wild. But he's definitely got access to some ideas, so it definitely stands out as something worth noting about this movie, because once we get through the movie, you're going to say, is that going to happen here in America? And lo and behold, since I made this, started working on this film analysis, I just retweeted it. There is,
excuse me, disclosed.tv posted a Fox News clip of the Chinese cyber army invading critical U.S. services, including the power grid, ports, pipelines, and water utilities. Anyway, so when you, this gets more into the geopolitical realm, not really my steez, so I'm not going to get too deep into it, but the point to take away, the Obamas had a hand in this movie, and the Obamas, they're very, you know, educated folks. They've been around a place or two. Makes you wonder if this isn't real. Okay, so the family, they're in their car, and they're headed out to this Airbnb, and we hear that the rental listing says, "Leave the world behind." That's where the title comes from, apparently. The son and daughter, what's their name? Archie and Rose. They're in the back seat. And again, look at the image on the Instagram. The boy is wearing a shorts that are black and white checkered shorts. And this is symbolic of Freemasonry with the black and white checkered tessellating floors in the lodges, right? The Moses pavements. And the girl is watching Friends on her iPad. That's right, Friends. Isn't that something? And later you find out in the episode, in the movie, that the episode she's watching is the final episode, the series finale. Now, what are the odds here? Matthew Perry just died, mysteriously, under that full moon, the Hunter Moon. And remember his tweet? Because we did two shows on Matthew Perry. Check those out. Recall his tweet October 22nd. He said, "Perfect movies. Back to the Future, Midnight Run," and then it was, then it had a blank line. Now, probably he was talking about the Batman movies because he was incessantly talking about Batman for a week before he died. But what if he was referencing this movie? I'm just going to throw that out there. I don't have any reason to believe that. Was there a connection there? I don't know. So the family, they take exit number 76. There's another 76. Another 76. Of course, the 76 references the Declaration of Independence of America from Britain. And we're talking about a revolution here. That's what we're talking about. And it cues up Kool and the Gang. They're arguably their best song, Misled. And it's funny because I wish I could remember who was the one I was having a conversation with on the DMs somewhere, that someone said, "Hey, you should watch the video for Misled." And I love the song. And I was like, "Oh, that's cool. I'll check it out." And if you watch the video, you're not going to believe what's in it. The lead singer, he's chasing this woman who's a ghost. But the band, they're masked up in cloaks and Eyes Wide Shut masks. And this is a video from what, like the late 70s, early 80s? So there's a nod to Eyes Wide Shut, another Kubrick film. And there's going to be more. This, whoever directed this movie was certainly into Kubrick. And who can blame him? All right, now we start part one. Or was it part two? Part one? I think I might have my parts wrong here, so don't quote me on these. I'm just going to say what I got in my notes and hope I'm right. Part one, the house, because it broke it up into, I think, four or five parts. And I'm going to play the clip for you here so you can hear it with your own ears. Listen to what the Wi-Fi password is.
The Wi-Fi password is a novella. The owner must be one of those cybersecurity guys.
I don't know if you caught that. Amanda shows, she's in the house, she says, "The Wi-Fi password is novella." What does that make you think of? It makes you think of Dream Novella. That is the Arthur Schnitzler novel that Kubrick was obsessed with, the whole basis for his film Eyes Wide Shut. To me, that's clearly an indicator. All right? Illuminate, confirm. Stamp it. So Amanda, she goes to the grocery store and she looks over. She sees Kevin Bacon. Kevin Bacon's there, and he's loading up on water and supplies, and they kind of exchange a look and, you know, whatever, right? Foreshadowing. Then Amanda and Clay and the family, the kids, they all go to Charleston Harbor to the beach, and Archie's like girlfriend Taylor, she drops a pin and he shows the phone to the mom and is like, hey, can we check out, can we go get Taylor? And she's like, no, she's in Sag Harbor. That's an hour away. And the image you see on the phone, if you look it up on Google Maps, because I would thought, man, when the movie's over, you're like, what did that have to do with anything? What did the Sag Harbor and the girlfriend Taylor have to do with anything? It had nothing to do with anything, as far as I could tell. So I thought, maybe that was a clue. So I looked it up on Google Maps. It doesn't look like the same spot. The pin that she provided doesn't quite look the same. It does show North Haven, but the bodies of water between North Haven and Sag Harbor are not, they don't look the same. I don't know what to make of that. It was weird. The only time it comes up again is later towards the end of the movie. There's a part where Archie's like, I wonder if Taylor's okay. And Clay, the dad, looks at him and is like, what are you talking about? And that's it. That's as close as you get to it. Now, fun fact, Sag Harbor is where Jimmy Buffett died. Fun fact, Jimmy Buffett was born on Christmas. Okay, so the family, they're on the beach. Here comes a massive oil tanker headed towards them. Everyone's just staring at it, assuming it's going to stop. But of course it does not. And it crashes onto the beach, very chaotic. Now this boat, if you look, it's called the White Lion. And that, I'm going to guess, that is probably a reference to the first slave ship called the White Lion that brought Africans to Virginia in 1619. Because later on in the movie, Clay is in his car and he sort of stops the radio on channel 1619. But the White Lion is symbolic. It is symbolic in terms of occult symbolism. So let's take a look. Astrology and alchemy. The Lion's Gate, all right? And the power of Lion's Gate lies in the cosmic synergy between the stars, signs, and numbers, and it's the annual alignment between the Sun in Leo and Sirius, the brightest star in the night sky, known as Alpha Canis Majoris, or the Dog Star. Now, if that sounds familiar, it's because I read that exact description on our episode about the Maui fires. That's right, because those started on the first day of the Lion's Gate opening up. Isn't that something? And, of course, the Lion's Gate is activated with the rising of the star Sirius, which is a binary star, but whatever. And it's the most occult thing that can happen, all right? It means that which is hidden is revealed, because Crowley and Grant, they called the Sirius star, the hidden sun, the sun behind the sun. The Freemasons call it the blazing star. It's also in every lodge. And recall that the boy Archie is wearing the black and white shorts. Seems odd. And now in alchemy, they use the symbolism of the lion as well. You typically see it in red or green, because in alchemy, it represents the stages of human evolution in the form of different animals like birds or lions. And Jung said that the lion represents primitive and turbulent psychological states in the human life cycle. Well, what do you think is about to happen in this movie? Primitive and turbulent psychological states with the breakdown of society. And if it's a white lion, then it would be the second stage of alchemy, the albedo. Post Negredo. After surrendering to the darkness of Negredo, it will release all this heavy, baggage, and you'll have this new form of fresh energy to convert to grow into the next stages, you know, because it goes black, white, yellow, red. Red being the phoenix, the rebirth, which I think is what that's what this movie is trying to show us, right? So they leave. They leave the beach after seeing this oil tanker breach. And they make a whole scene about stopping at Starbucks. Of all places. Isn't that something? We just did two full episodes about the symbolism of Starbucks being the Abraxas, chicken-headed snake god, witchcraft, Melusina, the Faustian bargains of selling one's soul to the devil, all tied to this symbol. And they make, a sort of non-relevant scene in the movie of stopping to get this coffee at the Starbucks. Then we go back to the house rental, and we're all back in the house. Amanda, she sees some deer in the backyard, and Clay says, "Oh, deer, those are good. That's a good omen in Mesoamerican mythology." You sure about that? Are you sure about that, buddy? We looked it up. Let's see what we found. Deers are considered sacred animals, messengers, or shamans. They represent the personification of virtue. But I looked specifically for this Mesoamerican symbolism. Boy, have I got some bad news. I'm going to reference you to Matthew Looper's book, The Beast Between, Deer in Maya Art and Culture. And the short version of what I'm about to read you is that deer are used as sacrifices to the gods. They were a parallel to human sacrifice because they used to do that down in Mesoamerica. And it gets into the, not in this reading, but it gets into the idea that antlers are a mystical, magical thing, and it points towards the heavens, and that's why the deer are considered divine messenger creatures from the gods. I'm going to read you some notes from this book, Matthew Looper's book. I didn't read the book. This is a synopsis, just to be clear. Chapter 3, Big Bucks, and Chapter 5, Locking Horns. Respectively consider the imagery of the deer hunt in the context of elite social and political status and with respect to sacrifice imagery. Chapter 3 shows that deer bodies provided objects for tax, tribute, and trade. The deer also acted as a symbol for larger ideas about prey versus predator, which theme in the movie. Finally, at the ruling level, dining on deer meat enabled competitive feasting and may have indicated control over the areas it roamed or the networks necessary for its procurement, even as the hunt itself acted as a metaphor for elite male heroism. Chapter 5 explores animal hierarchies displayed during various activities as demonstrated. Blah, 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 blah. As these chapters demonstrate, the deer can be connected with first-level elites by marking control of important resources, liminal areas, or youthful coming-of-age rituals. It can also be associated with the junior elite body as a provider of tribute or taxation, and or as inferior to the jaguar symbolism of supreme rulers. Alternatively, in a truly polysemous manner, the liminal deer can be equated with sacrificial victims who exist in a transitional moment between life and death as the prey of more powerful political leaders. In a further interchange of conceptual categories, first-tier elites could take the place of the deer sacrificial victim in expressing ritual power at liminal moments. Sacrifice for the elites. Boom. And it's all throughout the movie. That's what the symbolism of the deer is. Kind of scary. It's kind of scary it's being thrown out there. And I'm like, Obama, what are we doing, bro? What are we doing, man? Why are they warning us? And there's a reason why later you could argue that it's a warning. Hide your wife, hide your kids. All right. And if I forget, what I'm talking about is there's a parable provided by the daughter, Ruth, that could be a stark warning that we need to listen up and pay attention. Yeah, take that for what it's worth. All right. So we see the sun moving around the globe yet again with its cosmological bodies affecting us down on Earth, as above, so below, micro and macro. Follow along. Come on, folks. Get with me. Hermetic axiom there. Now it's late, and Amanda and Clay, they're drinking wine, having a good time, right? And this whole time, like, the internet's not working, right? They're like, oh, the TV's not working, the internet's not working, whatever, right? And Clay is talking about how one of his students, Maria Miller, was talking about how he's such an inspiration for her writing and how he's going to write the foreword to her book because he's a college professor. But what I'm thinking is, like, is he banging one of his students? Doesn't come up again. But I bet in the book it does. I bet in the book there's details of that. Some smutty little details. Meanwhile, there's a knock on the door. And they open the door, and it's a black man and his daughter, and they're dressed real nice. He's wearing suit and tie. She's in a dress. Turns out they came from a symphony, okay? And they tell Amanda and Clay, they're like, hey, this is kind of weird. We're the owners of the home. I know, like, this is unexpected, but here's what happened. We were at the symphony, and we went to our home in New York or wherever, and the power went out in the city, so we decided it's probably easier just for us to stay in our home, which is this home that we rented out to you. And I want you to look at my Instagram at Isaac Weishaupt. You'll notice there's artwork behind the front, right by the front door when they open the door. It's a painting of all seeing eyes, just a bunch of all seeing eyes. Where are we at now? Is that two references of the symbolism of the all seeing eye, right? The enlightenment, the awakening of the occult agenda. But now Amanda, she don't trust these two at all. Clay, he's kind of chill about it. They end up reluctantly agreeing, and they say, look, George, he says, look, I'm going to give you half your money back for this inconvenience. Here's $1,000, and we'll stay downstairs. And George, he's acting a bit funny, though. He's acting kind of funny. He tries to unlock the liquor cabinet with these keys because he's got some cash in there, but he can't find the key, and he's just like, oh, whoa, I forgot which key it is. And inside the drawer, he opens it up with the envelope of cash. There's a pistole right there. The suspension is building. Because you're wondering, is there really a blackout? Who are these people? Do they really own the home? So Clay, some other symbolism to consider. He's wearing a shirt that says Bikini Kills. This is a feminist punk band. Fun fact, the lead singer Kathleen Hanna is married to Adam Horovitz from the Beastie Boys. One of my favorites. In fact, I was just listening to License to Ill the other day. That's a timeless album. That's one of the greatest albums ever released by anyone, ever. Prove me wrong. And Kathleen Hanna, she also has a place in history because she wrote on Kurt Cobain's wall before he was famous. She wrote, Kurt smells like Teen Spirit. Because back in the day, here's the thing, young folks, there was deodorant called Teen Spirit. And she wrote, Kurt smells like Teen Spirit, and the rest is history, right? He uses that as the title of their breakout single. Okay, back to the movie. We hear that George, it's just George and his daughter, Ruth, and they're like, well, where's your wife? And George says, well, my wife was on a work trip to Morocco. We've lost contact with her because of the blackout. And we hear that she's an art dealer. Now, what does that remind you of? It reminds you of Eyes Wide Shut. Because remember, Alice was an art dealer. Nicole Kidman's character. Amanda asked for identification. What do you know? George left his wallet behind. This guy is acting mad sus right now. Right? What's he doing? Meanwhile, emergency broadcast warning plays on TV. And Ruth, that's George's daughter, right? She implies that this emergency it's not just a blackout. She thinks it's terrorism or power plants or something bad's going on. And now there's a bit of beef between Ruth and Amanda. Amanda just hates Ruth right off the bat. Because that's another, I'm not going to go into this in the analysis, but in the movie, there's this tension between Amanda and George and his daughter, Ruth. And I think the implication is that it's a racial issue, right? They don't specifically come out right and say it, but that's kind of what it seems like. There's a lot of racial undertones in the film, you know? Like in George's home in the basement, in the basement, they've got, you know, lots of historical black artwork and stuff like that. You know, it's an element, right? It's not harped upon, really, but it's there. And I think it's because there's this element of stoking a civil war. And if you followed my blog, you'll know that around 2012 to 2015, I was pointing out a lot of symbolism of what seemed like provocation of a race war, like Helter Skelter-esque. Lots of weird Manson symbolism showing up, like the term Rise was on a lot of stuff, and Rise was supposed to be a trigger. Charles Manson wrote it in blood as a way to trigger the race war. know, there was a lot of weird stuff going on, and, you know, I don't know if it went away necessarily, but it's an element in the show, for in the movie, for sure. So, let's see, what else we got? Oh, yeah, and then another element is when George and Ruth go downstairs, like I talked about, there's various, you know, sort of like black empowerment art, I guess, I don't know, and there's a piece of art on the wall, and it's United States of America, and it's in the crosshairs of red and green, a giant crosshair. And that is actually a poster called the United States of Attica. It says here, I looked it up because I thought, man, that's a strange American map, green and red. And I looked it up. Sure enough, you can actually, what I did was I screenshot it and I zoomed in and I read some of the wording about, it says something about violence in America. I thought, well, that's kind of weird. What is this? And I found it. It says the poster, the United States of Attica, was the most widely distributed of Faith Ringgold's posters during the 70s. It's dedicated to the men who died in 71 at Attica prison for demonstrating against the deplorable conditions they faced as inmates. The red, black, and green poster depicts a map of the United States, noting indigenous, slave, and immigrant uprisings and the dates and other details of acts of violence that occurred within each state since the 1700s. Racist violence, witch hunts, assassinations, lynchings, and other oppressive actions against the indigenous and people of color in the United States. It also includes military imperialist violence committed by the United States abroad, so on and so forth. A laconic invitation to add further... Okay. Yeah, at the bottom it says you can add more things here. It says a laconic invitation to add further acts of violence emphasizes historical continuity and the ceaselessness of violence as a defining characteristic of the development of the United States of America. Now, of course, there's like this race thing going on, you know, but ultimately the movie is about just civil war, civil unrest, regardless of skin color. And that's a theme throughout the film. But Amanda, she's still fuming. She's upstairs fuming and she's kind of tripping. She says, look, there's not one photo of this family in this home. And she thinks Ruth is snarky. Clay's like, no, they're cool. Chill out. Whatever. And the camera shot, it kind of goes between upstairs and downstairs. It reminds me, again, another as above, so below element kind of thing. And on the TV, for a split second, you see, it says CNN shows the cyber attack on America in the middle of the emergency broadcast system, but it goes out right away. So you can see that people are attempting to send messages out that the country is under attack. Then we start part two, the curve. And immediately I thought, oh, the earth's not flat. The earth's not flat. That's what we're going to find out. But not, no, that's not it. Again, we see the earth with a satellite. Ruth, Rose. I got my notes wrong here. Rose is, she's bugging her mom, Amanda, about how she just wants to finish Friends. She's on the series finale and her iPad glitched out. But there's no internet, right? Then Amanda, she sees some news flashes on her phone about cyber attacks and hackers, and it disappears as quick as she sees it. She starts bitching at Clay. Clay's like, all right, I'm going to get up, get out of bed. I'm going to drive into town and we're going to figure out what's going on. Ruth sees, I got the notes wrong. Rose. Rose sees a bunch of deer in the yard. She's kind of tripping out on it. There's a bunch of them, like, I don't know, dozens of deer. Then we see, you know, George, George is strapped, man. He's got his pistole. Ruth, she's got a vape. She's going to smoke. And she's in her bikini. She goes out by the pool where everyone's at. Archie, the boy, he starts sneaking in some photos. Meanwhile, Clay, he's driving into the town. He gets lost and he's frantic. And a woman who's screaming Spanish at him is asking for help, but he just is trembling. He's scared. So he leaves her. And a drone plane starts dropping all these pamphlets. And George, he goes over to the neighbor's house, which we find out the name of the neighbor's house is the Huxleys. It appears to be sort of looted or empty. And he goes in there and he grabs a satellite phone, but it's not working. Okay. Now, Huxley, let's not gloss over this. A Of course, it's a reference to the Huxley family, right? Aldous Huxley, who wrote the Brave New World novel. And we just talked about the Huxleys. I did a show about Jamie Foxx's, Netflix's show, They Cloned Tyrone. Remember that? And in that, you'll notice, again, symbolism. They have drinks called Soma. You got to look for it, though. In They Clone Tyrone, there's a drink called Soma. And that was a drug in Brave New World by Aldous Huxley. And Aldous Huxley, he wrote The Doors of Perception, which the cover of it has an all-seeing eye, by the way. Three of them, I believe. And The Doors of Perception obviously influenced a new age of thinking with Tim Leary and Ascending to Higher Consciousness. And, of course, Jim Morrison and The Doors got their name from this book. And Jim Morrison's dad was naval intelligence or whatever, right? Or the commander of the ship in the Gulf of Tonkin. The false flag that got us into the Vietnam War. You know, that's one of the things, man, while I'm thinking about this. These movies, they show us how dangerous humans are. And I actually agree with that. Like, I feel like that's a consideration. I don't think it's as bad as they want us to believe, though. I think if something terrible like that happened and then we had this massive cyber attack blackout, I think people would try to look out for each other. I think they would. Of course, you're going to have some people that are crazy. Of course. But I think the movies like this are trying to scare you and say, oh my God, you need Big Brother to take control and protect you.
You know?
And that's my whole beef with the traditionalist philosophy of Steve Bannon and Donald Trump, that we need this dictator to come, you know, come keep you in line and make sure you're safe. And like, that's all bullcrap, dude. No, bullshit. That's right. We're swearing today. I forgot. It's all bullshit because, no, it's you guys. You guys are the crooks, right? You guys are the crooks that got us into the Vietnam War. Didn't even happen. The Vietnamese didn't shoot nothing at our ship. But that's not to say there's not bad people in the world that need taken out, right? So, anyways, Aldous Huxley practiced ritual magic. He was friends with Aleister Crowley, and we went off the rails there. Aldous's brother Julian, he once wrote that the basic element in cultural transmission and transformation are psychological, which is, yes, that's what this movie is doing. It's planting the idea that we are in deep trouble if things go awry because human beings cannot be trusted. Anyways, Julian, he was an evolutionary biologist and a eugenicist. And, you know, something of a trend when you get into conspiracies and clones and all that stuff are these kinds of topics. And Julian, he coined the term transhumanism, and he was into eugenics and nature worship and population management, a bit on the nose for what this film is showing us, all right? Okay, so while George is over there, he goes to this beach and he sees a bunch of dead bodies, airplane debris. And while he's there, he sees a plane crash into the ocean. So George, he's back to this curve thing. Part two is called The Curve. He's back at the house, and he's talking to Amanda about the curve and how he has to read this curve for his work. And he makes predictions based upon the market. Okay, this guy's plugged in to what the elites are thinking and doing. Take a listen to what he says.
I saw it. You know, a while ago before all this happened, I looked at the market and I knew something was coming.
What do you mean?
In my line of work, you have to understand the patterns that govern the world. You have to learn how to read the curve. You spend as long as I have doing it, it can help you see the future. It holds steady, promises harmony. It inches up or down, you know that means something.
GH, why are you telling me this? Did your neighbor say something to you?
No, he wasn't home. But he has a satellite phone. I thought it could help us. I tried to use it, but it didn't work, even though it had enough juice. Now, the whole point of a satellite phone is that you always have a signal if you have a clear view of the sky, which I did. The only reason why it wouldn't work is if our satellites got knocked out of commission.
Our satellites. You think something happened to our satellites? The ones in space?
The satellites are networked to computers down here.
So you think that the hackers or whatever knocked out our satellites? Don't you think you're maybe getting a little carried away? I mean, maybe you just didn't use the phone right.
I saw a plane nosedive out of the sky into the ocean.
So we know George is, he's clued into what the big dogs are thinking, okay? He's got a lot of friends on the inside. And we're going to come back to that in this movie. Well, George realizes that the satellite phone he got from the Huxleys didn't work because the satellites in space must not be there. And I think the implication is that hackers moved the location of them or something. And this is also why the planes are crashing. Then we hear this loud buzzing noise. And everyone covers their ears. It must be very painful. And we cue up part three, the noise. And it starts out, we see Rose and Archie, the two kids, standing next to each other. And you'll notice that he's wearing a shirt that says Obey. She's wearing a shirt that says NASA. Therefore, it says Obey NASA. Again, I'll put the image on the Instagram. And it seems very literal. We're supposed to obey what NASA says, which could be the false flag invasion of Project Bluebeam. Right? Remember we talked about Project Bluebeam in Aliens, UFOs, and the Occult, Use Your Illusion 1 and 2? And the theory is that NASA's part of that. And if you read The Dark Path that I wrote, I mean, what are we on? 8 years ago now? 9 years ago? That's what NASA was telling us. They said in 2025, we're going to prove the existence of alien life. And wouldn't you know it? Aren't we exactly on that path? Who would have thought, right? And I'm not saying I'm a prophet. I'm very far from such. But who would have thought in 2017, 2016 was when I was writing it, I think, that we were going to have the government come out and say, yeah, there's unidentified aerial phenomenon, which happened in 2020. And then we've got all of these hearings. Well, I think it's because they show us what they're doing in movies, and they tell us, and the conspiracy theorists, sometimes they get it right. So Amanda, she tells George about how she saw Kevin Bacon at the convenience store loading up water and goods and such. She's like, I think this guy at the store knew what was going to happen. And George is like, oh yeah, that's Danny. I know Danny. He's the contractor I was telling you about. Okay, so Danny's plugged in too. All these people are in the know. Okay, here comes Clay. He's back. He shook. He says he got lost. Doesn't mention the Spanish-speaking woman. He gives them this red pamphlet that dropped from a drone. It's written in Arabic, and it says, Death to America. George says, what's the point of dropping pamphlets in another language if we can't read them? Because the only reason they deciphered it said Death to America is because Archie played a video game where he recognized the phrase. So Amanda and Clay, they're like, look, we're out of here. Something bad's happening. We got to go to Amanda's sister in Jersey. And they head out. They get down the road, and they see a bunch of Teslas blocking the road, piled up Teslas. Amanda gets out to investigate. And there's another recurring theme in this movie. Amanda seems to be Amanda seems to be portraying the masculine protector energy more than Clay. She's making all the vacation plans. She's kind of more protective and more worried about letting strangers in. She tells Clay, stay in the car with the kids. I'm going to go check this out. Well, I don't know what this lends into the storyline, but it's very strange. Clay is very incapable of doing anything. He's a total schmuck. So What happens is she goes to look at these Teslas. They're brand new. They're coming out of the factory, and they're set to autopilot, but the satellites are out. So she looks down the road, and what do you know? Here comes Teslas flying on the road with no driver. So she runs back to the car, and they take out, and that was actually a really cool scene. Yeah. So they head back to the house, back to George and Ruth's house. Now we're in part four, the flood. So Rose, she's still trying to watch Friends on her iPad. And if you look on her nightstand, I'll put, again, image on the Instagram. Look on her nightstand. She drew an all-seeing eye. Isn't that something? She drew an all-seeing eye on her nightstand in crayon. What is that? Three or four all-seeing eyes now. Archie, he's in his room. He had snuck some photos of Ruth. So he's under the sheets punching the clown. Ruth asks Clay. Ruth's out back with, Clay's in his room filling the bathtub for some water for the emergencies. Ruth pops in. She's like, hey, you smoke? I got me some marijuana vape. So they go outside to smoke. She should ask Amanda because Amanda's tripping, man. But anyway, she asks Clay. He goes out and they sit down. She immediately asks him if he ever fucked one of his students. And I thought, well, that's odd. I mean, she looks pretty young. I mean, I don't know, 22. I don't know. And he's Ethan Hawke. What is he, like 55? I thought, that's kind of weird. Which makes me want to read the books. I'm like, I bet there's some kinky shit going on in this book. So if you read the book and there's any freaky shit, let me know. So anyways, Amanda and George, they're drinking wine while Ruth and Clay are out smoking up. They're having some conversation about what they're going to do, how they're going to handle this situation while the bitches are outside smoking, right? And he reveals that he came to the house because he was warned. He's got a very famous client. He's not a celebrity, but he's famous. And he's into defense contracting, and he uses top secret money from the Pentagon. And this is the part where my jaw dropped a little bit. I'm going to play this clip. It's very long. It's about 4 minutes. And I'm going to hit you on the other side.
Why I came here involves something that happened to me a few years back. One of my clients invited me and my wife to a private event. My client, E.M. Well, I won't say his name, but you'd recognize it, though.
Is he a celebrity?
Oh, no, nothing like that. But in the business world, he's one of the biggest out there. He deals mostly in defense contracting. I'm talking hush-hush, top-secret money from the Pentagon. Perhaps the most powerful person I've ever had a meal with. Anyway, we're at this soiree at his house. It's getting late. My wife, she wants to go. But he and I are just having a blast. And he doesn't want the night to end. After a few more glares, my wife agrees to take a cab and I'll come home after.
I bet she was real happy about that.
So we're having a few more drinks, getting really sauced. And at one point, I don't think he could stand and I was pretty wobbly myself.
I wouldn't know anything about that, sir.
So he takes me to his study, smoke a few cigars, and we're sort of flying high, laughing at almost everything. Eventually he starts in how much he likes me and how he wishes he could invite me on this trip he's about to go on.
What kind of trip? Where's he going?
That's exactly what I asked. And he turns to me, a serious face, and he says, oh, you know, just my annual meeting with the rest of the evil cabal that runs the world. He was the kind of guy that was always known for jokes like that. Again, if I told you his name, you'd understand.
Well, I just have to take your word for it. And now, if you'll excuse me, I'm gonna top off my life.
And then, yesterday before the symphony, my friend calls me up. No scheduled appointment like he usually does, just calls me out of the blue. And wants me to move around some of his money. And we're
We're talking some big numbers, even for him. And as we're getting off the phone, I asked if he wanted to grab a drink. He tells me he's going away for a while. I joke back to him. Oh, yeah? You hanging with your evil cabal this weekend? Thought that was only during the winter solstice. And he doesn't laugh. And he always laughs, even with bad jokes. All he said was, take care of yourself. Almost as if he felt sorry for me. Ever since, I haven't been able to get it out of my head.
Are you saying, are you thinking that your friend is somehow behind what's happening here?
No, nothing like that. The conspiracy theory about a shadowy group of people in the world is far too lazy of an explanation. Especially when the truth is much scarier.
What is the truth?
No one is in control. No one is pulling the strings. Sure, there are those like my friend who might have the right kind of access to the right kind of information. But when events like this happen in the world, the best even the most powerful people can hope for is a heads up. Sorry, I guess the story's kind of a buzzkill.
Isn't that something? He tells the story of a famous defense guy who said he attends an annual meeting with an evil cabal during the winter solstice. Ritualistic event. Made me think of Bohemian Grove. And the guy wanted him to move all of his money the day before the cyber attack. This guy knew it was about to go down. He says that, and then he claims there's no conspiracy at all. Just powerful people that have, they don't have any control over this, which I think is bullshit. I think that's all part of this is, again, there's a couple sort of falsehoods being presented here. One is that, hey, if the government collapses, it's going to be an animal kingdom out there and crazy shit's going to go down. And then the other one, and what do I know? Maybe, right? I stay prepared in case some shit happens. I'm a borderline doomsday prepper myself, okay? So, like, don't get it twisted. I'd rather be incorrect, nicely surprised, but we can't argue that they are putting out the imagery that, like, you should be scared. You should be scared. And then the other one is this thing. Oh, there's no conspiracy at all. All these elitists hanging, these rich guys hanging out. There's no conspiracy. They can't make this kind of thing happen, but they're in the know when it does happen. Oh, come on. Come on. It says powerful people that have no control. At best, this group knows they get a heads up of when this stuff's going to happen. All right, well, fair enough. At least they admit something, right? Give us something. And, you know, what group meets up at the winter solstice? And I did a little research. You know, obviously the Saturnalia parties kick off around this time. The Saturn worship parties. So that's what makes me think the annual get-together is the Saturnalia event at the winter solstice. Bilderberg Group meets in May. Trilateral seems to fluctuate. I've seen May, October, November. Bohemian Grove is July. That was the first one I thought of was Bohemian Grove because we just did a show about it. But lots of these Illuminati groups, they have tons of meetings, so it's really hard to say. You've got the World Economic Forum. You've got the Club of Rome. You got the Council of Foreign Relations. And if you go to the Council of Foreign Relations, it's and then you've got, who else you got? The CNP? Anyway, let's see here. From their own website, Council of Foreign Relations, it says, the national program convenes two large events each year, the National Conference in June at CFR's New York headquarters, and the National Symposium in December in Menlo Park, California. So there you go. There's one. Maybe he's referencing the Council of Foreign Relations. I don't know. But back to Amanda and George. They go downstairs to this room with a bunch of records. And they're looking through the records. And Amanda decides to play next. Too Close. You know the song I'm talking about from the 90s. Baby, when we're grinding. That song. I thought, what is she doing? What is she doing? That is a, you know, get rocked up and dance all close and get filthy kind of song, right? And I love cinematically, they're baking in so much suspense because your mind is racing when you're watching this. You're like, are they fitting to fuck right now? Is that what's about to happen? Clay and Ruth, they're outside smoking and she asked him, she's like, hey, you ever fuck one of your students? Implying that, like, maybe she's attracted to him. How upsetting is this? Clay, he's just aloof. Amanda's calling all the shots in this relationship. Now she's in the arms of this very rich, successful guy. This alpha, he's taking charge. Oh, Clay, what are you doing, buddy? Get it together. Oh, man. Okay. But anyway, she holds up the record, and on the record cover, it has one member of the group next, and he's doing the vow of silence, the finger to the lips, the vow of Harpocrates. That's interesting, isn't it? And then I'm thinking, okay, part four, it's called The Flood. And originally I thought, oh, like the deluge, you know, and it's raining a ton. Or is it a sexual reference? Like everyone's trying to get it in right now. Because the boy, he's punching the clown, looking at photos of the girl. The girl's asking Clay if he's trying to fuck. Mom is dancing to the boner song with George. What the hell is going on? Okay, so then everything settles in. No one gets it in. I wonder if in the book they do, though. But anyway, they're all relaxed, and they're in the bedroom, and Rose, she's talking to Amanda, and she tells a story about God sending warnings to this man about a coming flood. He never takes action. He drowns, and then he blames God. Take a listen to this story.
Anyway, the story was about a man who lived by the river. And he hears on the radio that the river is going to flood the town and everyone should leave. But the man doesn't go anywhere because he prays every day, knows that God loves him and will save him. But then the flood actually happens. And this guy in a rowboat sees the man and says, hey, come on, I can save you. But the man tells him he isn't going anywhere. Then a helicopter comes flying by, and the pilot lowers a ladder, but the man tells him he isn't going anywhere. After that, the man drowns in the flood. And so he goes up to heaven, and he's really angry at God, and he tells him, I prayed to you every day. I thought you loved me. Why didn't you save me? And God says, I sent you a radio report, a rowboat, and a helicopter. What more do you want?
What's this about, Rose?
I think I'm done waiting.
Now, this story is the parable of the drowning man. And my take is that we're talking about faith versus action, relying on God versus relying on the self, and even science. Because there is a balance to be had there. This was something discussed and argued over the last few years. Remember the thing from 2020 that will never go away? In fact, I just got over my second time getting the thing from 2020 that will never go away. Thank you very much. But thank you, Fauci and the mysterious lab. But the parable was used to convince people that they should accept science's solutions, if you catch my drift. It's a nice little theoretical exercise, if you will, because there is a balance to be had between the two. It's true. So Ruth tells her dad, George, that they're downstairs sleeping in the basement, right? And she tells her dad that Clay is trying to fuck her. What? Now, I watched this movie twice, and I sure didn't see anything like that being portrayed. She was the one that come out and says, "So do you fuck students?" If anyone was putting moves down, it was her on him. But her point is that her and her dad, they shouldn't trust anyone in these end times at all. Ironically, that's how Amanda feels as well. And that's the beef that Amanda and Ruth have with each other. Neither one of them wants to trust each other. But yeah, I thought that was really weird. What's that all about? Why this change of heart? Like, she was having a great time smoking with him. Now she's trying to campaign for why they shouldn't trust this family. Kind of a weird, I don't know if incontinuity is the right term, but a weird shift in the plot. And she says, you know, if the world falls apart, they shouldn't just give out trust to anyone, especially white people. Whoa. And, you know, and what they're talking about is, you know, the reason they show us this is because this is the concern they have. If society collapsing in on itself when no one trusts anyone, when Big Brother, when the government isn't intact to police everyone, what's going to happen? Everyone's going to turn on each other. And I know a lot of people say, no, that's in the movie because Obama's racist and hates white people. But no, I don't think so. I mean, that's not what it, you didn't watch this movie and say, oh, these damn white people, look at them being portrayed as devils. You don't get that at all. So that's not it. I think it's more of a warning that if we do become, with a collapse of society, it will be triggered into making people go back to a sort of animal way of thinking and embracing more racist tones and ideologies of being scared of the other people. That's what the problem is. And she does make an interesting point, though. She says, this is our house and we're sleeping in the basement. While the other family, they're up in the owner's suites up there. And I think they're on day 4 or something. So that Airbnb rental time is up. And I thought, well, that's a good point. Why don't they offer to switch places? It is their home after all. All right, next. This is very intriguing. You got to see these images to believe it. They show from the perspective of someone like standing on the moon, they show a full eclipse of the Earth, of the sun going behind the Earth from the perspective of the moon, and they show the tattered U.S. flag up there. What's that about? Did a human being put a flag on that moon? According to a movie, they did. I think that's what we saw the first time was a movie too. Again with Kubrick, right? You could throw the Kubrick in there again because The Shining was all about, you know, according to the great Jay Widener, was showing us that Kubrick faked the moon landing. Interesting, right? Okay, so Archie, he wakes up and he's done playing with himself, I guess, and his teeth start falling out. And he starts picking them out of his mouth like little chiclets. Then we're on to part 5, the last one. This is the final part, folks. Ruth, she asks Archie how he's feeling because his teeth are all falling out. Amanda's being a mega bitch still. And Archie, he says, you know, I got bit by a tick in the woods. Maybe this is from that. So Amanda, she's, you know, playing protector still. She says, well, we got to get you some medical help. And George says, well, we can go down to Kevin Bacon's house. Danny, you know, Danny, he's a doomsday prepper. He's got antibiotics and crap. Let's go down to his place. And again, you know, it's George is manning up. Amanda's manning up. Clay's just being a goof. Clay's just out there goofing around. He's looking for, you know, Ruth's missing. He's out there looking for her, and he just comes in. He's just like, I don't know where she is. Anyway. So where we're at is Clay, George, and Archie, they go head to Kevin Bacon's house, Danny. Ruth and Amanda, who hate each other, they're out looking for Ruth. They're going to go out to the shed. No, I'm sorry, Rose. Rose is missing. Excuse me. Okay, so they got, so Amanda and Ruth are on the shed, hating on each other, of course, because they do. And Amanda gives this speech about how awful humans really are. And ironically, Ruth and her find common ground on how much they don't trust each other. Take a listen.
Every day, all day, my job, my whole job is to understand people well enough so that I know how to lie to them, so I can sell them things they don't really want. And when you study people like that, when you really see the way they treat each other, well, you're no dummy. You see what they do, and they do it without even thinking about it. Fuck. I did it to you and your dad, and I don't even really know why. We fuck each other over all the time without even realizing it. We fuck every living thing on this planet over and think it'll be fine because we use paper straws and order the free-range chicken. And the sick thing is, I think deep down we know we're not fooling anyone. I think we know we're living a lie, an agreed-upon mass delusion to help us ignore and keep ignoring how awful we really are.
Now, this is the perspective, I think, of the what the Illuminati want us to believe in. That humans cannot be trusted to do the right thing. Kind of like how Ruth was saying how awful the family was and all that stuff. And she also lumps in a critique about how all of humanity, we're all just living this lie through feel-good consumerism, like drinking out of paper straws. Meanwhile, we're dumping just a ton of plastic into the ocean on a million other fronts. You know, and I could be brought to either side of that argument. I really could. I think that corporate America does a great job of deceiving us and making us think that we're not destroying the planet in some ways. But then I could also be pulled to the other side that, you know what, if people are given the opportunity to be good and they're not being deceived, that they will do the right thing. But, I screwed that up. you could argue that, on the one hand, humans will do the wrong thing because they're greedy and lazy, and you need some kind of authority figure like the Illuminati to steer them in the right direction. Or you could convince me that, no, we don't need an authoritarian figure. People will do the right thing. Because I think there's great examples of both. I think it's an interesting debate to have. But you know where this film wants you to go. They want you to believe in an Illuminati needed to control us. Okay, so finally we're at Kevin Bacon's place, Danny. He's the tarot hermit archetype. He knows what's up. He's got forewarning advanced knowledge of this. He's been ready for this. He's very curt and to the point. You can tell he's a conspiracy theorist as well. He suggests maybe those humming sounds are actually weapon attacks. That's why Archie's teeth are falling out. Referencing the Cuba microwave energy weapons, otherwise known as directed energy weapons. There was an event where Americans, I think this happened it's a long time ago, maybe 8 years ago, Americans at the embassy in Cuba started getting all these brain injuries and crazy stuff going on. And just this year, the intelligence organizations concluded that this was not a directed energy weapon, that this was just, I guess, dumb luck. I don't know. It was really strange. I remember it was covered on 60 Minutes and stuff. But Danny, he's a doomsday prepper. He is fully ready for this new survivalist world. He's protecting his own. He's not trying to help anyone who wasn't prepared. Clay's like, bro, here, I'm going to give you $1,000 cash for some antibiotics. Danny says, well, that's not going to be worth much if the U.S. dollar and the government collapse. Which is why you got to get gold, folks. You got to get those silver and gold coins. That's what some of my doomsday prepper buddies are into. Guns, food, water, silver and gold coins. But Danny, he's your quintessential doomsday prepper. And he suggests that, he's like, look, why don't you go over to the other neighbor's house and quit barking up this tree? These guys, the Thorns, they built a doomsday bunker. And Danny's like, good luck. He clutches his shotgun. He's like, take a hike. Get out of here. But George, he's not going out like a punk. He pulls the strap. Now we got a good old-fashioned standoff. And Clay, he's over there peeing his little pants. Of course. George is about that action. You know? That's why Amanda was dancing with George in his arms that night. And Clay, he even, and I'm not even exaggerating, he pleads for the help, which is fine. But he says, I'm a useless man. Oh, come on, Clay. Get it together, Clay. You know? Like, Clay, when society gets back together, Clay, you're going to join that CrossFit gym and you're going to be climbing ropes and deadlifting in no time, buddy. We need to get you back in your manhood. You need to get on those Alex Jones boner juice pills, whatever they are. Oh, Clay. I hate to see Ethan Hawke going out like this, right? And Clay, he starts appealing to Danny's ego. He says, you know, I'm a useless man, but you're a prepared man. And Danny says, fuck yeah, I am. But what do you know? It worked. It worked. Clay successfully got the pills from Danny for his son. And in a way, I think, maybe I shouldn't be so hard on Clay. You know, that's a man who swallows his pride and he's basically sucking this other guy off saying, oh, you're a real man. You know what? He sacrificed his own ego and his own pride for his son. That's what a real father does. And I thought, you know what, Clay, you're all right. You're all right in my book. Not so bad. Meanwhile, Amanda and Ruth, they're out in that shed. They finally have their little talk and they're like, okay, we're on the same side. Let's go. And they go to leave, but this whole gang of deer or elk or whatever, they surround them. But Amanda starts screaming and flailing her arms to scare them away. And that works too. So look at what's happening. Let's back out a second here. We've got Kevin Bacon pointing guns at George and George pointing gun at Kevin Bacon. We got the animals trying to gore Amanda and Ruth. The messaging here is that we're not much further evolved than animals. Especially in a meltdown situation like this, that look, within a couple days, we're back to an animal sort of world of kill or be killed real quick. And you know who else supports that philosophy is the Church of Satan. They say man is just an animal. So Danny ends up taking the cash. Clay gets the antibiotics for Archie. And it turned out the negotiation worked better than the guns anyway. Right? Because in the end, Clay did provide for his family and he did end up getting the antibiotics. So take from that what you will. And then they're sitting there getting ready to sort of depart. And Danny talks about how he's got a buddy who saw these pamphlets written in Korean and Mandarin, not Arabic, as Clay shows him. So the conclusion here is that, well, there's multiple languages. That must mean multiple enemy countries have teamed up to take America out. So Amanda, they get away from the deer and she follows the tracks to find Rose. They head towards that mansion, the Thorn mansion, right? And you know what else? Now I'm talking about all this. Thorn, is that the name of the mansion? The family, I mean? Let's check it out here. Thorns? I got to find. Yeah, the Thorns. Isn't that the name of, what's the dude from that 70s show? Ashton Kutcher's transhumanistic spying on kids software thing that he's in bed with the intelligence agencies to spy on kids and stuff. Interesting. Well, anyway, Amanda, they're heading towards the mansion, the Thorn mansion that has the Doomsday Bunker in it. Okay. Then back to Danny's. George and Clay, they're in the car. They're getting ready to leave Danny's. And listen to what George says to Clay. Again, this is a very long clip, and immediately you're going to hear the term, I want to make sure you're on the level. Because on the level is a Freemasonic term, right? That's a term they use in Freemasonry. And George then lays out a plan that he heard about of how to topple a whole ass government. And that's exactly what's going on in the movie. Take a listen.
Before we go, I need to know that you're on the level with me. No matter how far this thing goes, I need to know that we're good. Because if what just happened here is happening everywhere, we need to get to that bunker Danny told us about, and we need to get there now.
What are you talking about? You know something.
I had a sneaking suspicion, but I wanted more information first. All the signs were there, sure, but I didn't want to scare anyone. You'd have called me crazy, because it is crazy. It would have made more sense if we were on the brink of an all-out invasion. But this, I didn't think we'd actually let something like this happen. I thought we were smarter than that.
Let what happen?
Because my primary client works in the defense sector, I spent a lot of time studying the cost-benefit analysis of military campaigns. There was one program in particular that terrified my client the most. A simple three-stage maneuver that could topple a country's government from within. First stage was isolation. Disable their communication and transportation. Make the target as deaf, dumb, and paralyzed as possible. Setting them up for the second stage. Synchronized chaos. Terrorize them with covert attacks and misinformation. Overwhelming their defense capabilities, leaving their weapon systems vulnerable to extremists in their own military. Without a clear enemy or motive, people would start turning on each other. Done successfully, the third stage would happen on its own.
What's the third stage?
Coup d'etat. Civil war. Collapse. This program was considered the most cost-effective way to destabilize a country. Because if the target nation was dysfunctional enough, it would, in essence, do the work for you. Whoever started this wants us to finish it.
So I'm watching this and I'm thinking, hey, Obama, why are we sharing this information with the whole world? Can we not do that, please? Please don't give anybody these ideas. But then the other option is maybe it's a warning. Maybe it's a warning for us to get ready for it. Like I said earlier, they're on the news, they were talking about China infiltrating and hacking into our stuff already. And then you think about what Rose said, the parable about God giving us warnings. And you think, uh-oh, is that what this is? Are they warning us? Is this revelation of the method type stuff? There's an app where you can follow what stocks politicians buy. What's Obama buying? Is he buying gun stocks? Is he selling his stocks? What's going on? Remember what they say. They said, the final stage of the plan, the target nation will do the work for you if they're dysfunctional enough. And what has been going on in this country the last few years? They've been increasing the dysfunctionality of our entire country. They being, I don't know who. So now we're in the final scene. We're in the Thorn Mansion. Rose is grubbing down on some food. What a shit. She doesn't even tell her family. I actually read a synopsis of the book, and in the book, apparently she actually is taking food back to the family. So, but in the movie, she's a jerk. And worse yet, she hears her mom calling for her, but before she goes out to tell her mom she's okay, she gets distracted and goes down this other hallway. And the hallway is all red. Remember at the beginning, their room was all blue. Like you got this blue and this red juxtaposition kind of. And she goes down the stairs and you see art on the wall that says, "Hope begins in the dark." What does this mean? Is this the duality, the idea of needing darkness for there to be light? Is the light a Luciferian government? I don't know. Is it a reference to Obama's campaign? Remember, Obama's campaign was about hope. So she goes down the stairs towards the doomsday bunker. She kicks on the power. You can see it's ready for anything down there, man. Their doomsday bunker is nicer than most people's homes. But if you look on the kitchen counter, you'll see coffee mugs with stars and stripes. There's more American stuff. But next to it is a cookie jar that looks like Aunt Jemima. And I thought, what? Then in the pantry, they show all these canned goods and you see Aunt Jemima in there as well. You know, I'm thinking, okay, that was on purpose. Because that mascot has been retired for its, you know, racist undertones, overtones. I don't know, whatever. And this is where your boy came through in the clutch. I knew that there was going to be one particular item in that pantry, and I had to get a screenshot to look for it because I knew it was going to be in there. And you already know where we're going with that. That's right. From The Shining, Calumet baking powder. It's in my book, Kubrick's Code. We talked about the Calumet. You know, a reference about imperializing Native Americans, because Jack, he says to the ghost bartender something about white man's burden. It's this idea that, well, the white man knows it all, and unfortunately, we got to keep everybody in check. That's a very Illuminati thinking. And sure enough, there's Calumet in this pantry. I need to get the screenshot. I don't think I grabbed a shot of that. Maybe I will. Maybe if I'm nice enough, I'll put that on the Instagram too. I just got to make a note to do that. But yeah, the Calumet is in there too. So there's another reference to The Shining. Clearly a connection. And at this point, you see the emergency alert system on their TV. It says the U.S. is under attack from rogue enemies. Rose goes over to the DVD collection. Of course, Friends is in there. She pops it in. She finally watches the series finale, the last one. Final credits kick. We hear the Friends song, and that's a wrap. And if you keep listening, they play a song by Lil Yachty called The Paradigm. Shout out Jay Dyer. He sent me a little tweet on this, the Paradigm. And the lyrics say, "Meet me at the bridge past 9. Turn off our phones if you need some downtime. Kick off your shoes and unwind. Relax your brain as you enter the paradigm. You're not dealing with the typical, one-of-a-kind, super individual. I see the light. Forget about bills, riding them hills, dipping in cheap thrills, posing for stills, popping them pills. Doubling down, devil's in town, it's trickling down." Now, a new paradigm is what the collapse would mean. And when you see the lyrics about the light and the devil's in town, you could argue this is the Luciferian world order, and it's trickling down. Right? Like trickle-down economics that doesn't work. You give all the money to the rich people, and if they're nice enough, they'll give out to the poor. They will not, all right? So let's wrap this up, man. Wow. In conclusion, one major theme is that of these elites leveraging events, right? They leverage the events. They facilitate them, or they leverage them, or both. At the very bare minimum, they get advance notice. And some examples here, the Doomsday Bunker family, they were ready. George talked about the defense contractor buddy moving all of his money the day before the attacks. Kevin Bacon, he's another defense guy, and he knew it. And let's now look at Cool and the Gang, that song Misled. In the song, on the video, you see the Eyes Wide Shut stuff. And Eyes Wide Shut is about the elitists having a different reality. They live in a different world. They go over the rainbow. They're wearing the mask and the cloaks. They're operating in the shadows. Again, and I need to really post my interview with Jessica Reed Krause on here. If you haven't listened to my interview with her about Eyes Wide Shut on House and Habit, her Substack, you got to check that one out. Plus, you've got literally the word, the title of the song is Misled, misleading the people. And then you heard the Wi-Fi password is Novella, meaning like a dream novella. And George's wife was an art dealer like Alice in Eyes Wide Shut. And then you had the Kubrick Shining references of American propaganda in Calumet. Also, the name Danny is in The Shining as well. That's the boy with a dissociative identity disorder who's sexually traumatized and abused. And Danny is the name of Kevin Bacon's character. Now, is all this about the conspiracy of an Illuminati being at a higher level than us? I believe so. Is it because they follow cosmological movements? Yes. Is it because they're making events happen? Yes. Allowing them to happen at the minimum. I agree. But recall over the last 10 years how there's been this sort of depiction of America sort of coming undone. Civil unrest. And one counterpoint I will provide, because I've seen a lot of videos on TikTok of organized shoplifting where you get a bunch of people wearing masks and gloves and they all break into a store in the mall and just unload a bunch of stuff and run out the door with it, right? And you watch this and you're like, man, is this what's going on? And I saw a different TikTok with a guy who said that these companies claimed that 50% of their losses were due to this organizational shoplifting. But then they had to come out and retract it and say they were actually wrong. They carried the zero. It was actually only 5% of their retail losses were because of organizational shoplifting. The other, it was actually because they were losing a bunch of stuff. But the point is of course you're going to have crime all the time, you know, regardless, right? And it's by no means acceptable. I watch those videos of people stealing the stuff and I think, man, you got to do something about that. Come on. You can't have, because, you know, I'm very anti-authoritarian, but also on the other side of that, if you read the book Sapiens by Yuval Harari, he talks about how, I think it was that book, where you can't have a strong economy without strong law and order. You got to have some predictability and some stability. It can't just be people stealing crap whenever they want to steal it and stuff like that. So there's a balance to be had. Okay. Also recall the deer symbolism of sacrificing humans for the gods by the elites. And George's rich friend goes to these annual elite gatherings with the evil cabal on the solstice. And those nods to Huxley don't sit well with me either, because he was very much interested in eugenics and population control. And we've got the all-seeing eyes on the cover of The Doors of Perception. And throughout all the movie, there's all-seeing eyes. And then you got the idea of rituals. You see a lot of parallels to spirituality and evolutionary moments, like the Great Flood, right? The deluge, destroying and starting over, tearing down and rebuilding. This is the solvent coagula you see on the arms of the Baphomet. And the Huxleys, they were pushing a lot of ideas that are common in the UN Agenda 2030 stuff, eugenics or population growth control and things like that. Another ritualistic element is the cosmological body events. We saw eclipses of all kinds in the film, the one from the moon. You had the black sun, which is the alchemical symbol of the blackening, the evolution of man. And the moon eclipse makes me think of the perspective of the outer realm, because that's the perspective they showed it to us from the moon, right? Meaning, like, that's where the consciousness will be traveling. And Elon Musk is into this, right? He talked about us moving to Mars. He bought Twitter, and I heard Donut, you know, shout out Donut. He talked about Elon Musk buying Twitter as a psyop, because now Elon Musk is in charge of this social media app that is kind of crucial and critical for any kind of social unrest or uprising. Remember, the Arab Spring was part of it years ago. And now Alex Jones is back on there. Could it be that they're trying to sort of pull the radicals out of the woodwork so they can monitor them? I don't know. You know, Twitter's a dirty little place. It's like 4chan, right? The Wild West of free speech. But remember the plan to topple the government? The first step he tells us about is isolation. And that reminded me of the QAnon theory, where they kept saying that we're going to have the 10 days of darkness, but they're going to shut down all the news. They kept saying it was coming, and it never came. Well, that's the first step. Is this movie, does Obama know something that we don't, that this Q movement has ulterior motives, maybe? And who's behind it if that's the case? Is it the enemy countries? Is it Russia and China? Is that what's been happening in America? They've been trying to divide us through social media, manipulating our social media timelines, Remember when Facebook got caught doing the emotional contagion experiment where they were showing certain people certain stories to see if they made them think more negatively? Is this why the American politicians hate TikTok so much? They think that TikTok's going to facilitate this kind of thing? And recall there was that particular event on Jan 6, and it seemed that it was possible that overthrowing the government wasn't that hard when the police just kind of let people walk in. It was really weird, right? I don't know what happened that day. I know it was bizarre. Shouldn't let that kind of thing happen. And it just seemed weird to me that these people broke in to where our elected leaders are doing their vote for the American president, and the cops were just like, okay, come on in. That's bizarre. That makes zero sense. It's kind of like 9/11. I don't know what really happened. I just know the official story. that doesn't sit well. I don't believe that one second. And in double conclusion here, remember, the target nation will do the work for you if they're dysfunctional enough. So let's not give that to them. All right? We got to get along. Can't be devolving. And I'm not saying don't be prepared, because you should be, right? You should be prepared for stuff. I myself am. I still got like plastic and what are those pills you take if a nuke drops? I got those pills, man. Anyway, I'm just saying, but like, don't lose trust in humanity, right? Like, especially if you want to take it from a Christian angle, like you're supposed to love one another. So there you go. Whew, that was a long one. But I hope you enjoyed that. Thank you for supporting the show. You're apparently on the bonus supporter feed, and you keep the show alive. Supporters keep the show alive. Say that. I mean that. It means the most to me. If it wasn't for you all supporting the show, I wouldn't do it. And I mean that. So thank you very much for supporting the show. I hope you have some good holidays. Stay woke.